Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It's the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this pretty but hot. It is a warm day today, and the pool is tolerable.
Is that right?
Is the pool
open?
Especially when you're having to do some stuff outside.
Is the pool house for rent by option? You know, is there you got space? You got space?
I don't know. I might think about that.
All right, cool. We could talk.
I may need to. You know, I'm retired.
So I know. Well, and
may need some extra income.
And I got extra space. You know, I got Bagwell's old room that's sitting there doing nothing.
Right.
So I mean,
we could little PSA for folks that are out and about. For those folks that might be headed out toward Moores Mill, or if you're headed trying to, you know, find a different way to get out toward Wrights Mill or South College, avoid Moores Mill. Avoid Moores Mill Road if you can.
Do you think the answer is to go to college?
Got to be to go to college now, or else go all the way on down to Bent Creek.
Go over by the old Auburn Links.
Go down. I mean, you either go down by Sam's, or you go down to college if you want to get out across the interstate.
How many live broadcasts did we do in Auburn Links together in our career back then?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
So, I miss Auburn Links.
Well,
I don't even play golf anymore.
If you're trying to get across the clubhouse a lot. Yeah, if you're
I
trying
love,
to get to South Auburn on the other side of the interstate, don't take Moores Mill today, because they are resurfacing Moores Mill Road out there, like between Grove Hill and Moores Mill. And a lane has been, there are only two lanes available. They've blacktopped two lanes. There's one lane that hasn't been resurfaced, but they've cut one lane down. So I yesterday, after taking college, and there was a ton of traffic on college yesterday, I thought, well, I'll try Moores Mill. And I left my house, and I live in out there in the Wrights Mill subdivision. Okay, out near Chihuahua. Left the house at 3:20, came down. Everything seemed okay until I got near Moores Mill Road. And then I realized, oh, wow, traffic is backed up. And it was backed up not as bad for people approaching going down Ogletree Road. But
folks were already taking that bridge, and now practically everyone else was going to take the other bridge. I think that's where a lot of the traffic is moving to.
With it being blacktopped, the road, Moores Mill itself, was backed up all the way from the intersection across the interstate. I mean, and there were more than a few horns being beeped, and it's like, it's not going to do you any good. And there were a couple of wise guys that decided to turn around and get in the middle lane.
Oh, that usually clears traffic right up, though.
Oh, yeah.
Bills, when you just lean on your horn,
So plan on a different route, or plan on it taking you a long time. My wife was over, I believe, at the mall, and I called her just to make sure if she was on her way home, don't take that way, because she was about to turn down there. So just a little public service announcement for you here at the start of the Thursday show. All right, you've heard the voices of all of us that usually are on the mics. Drew's here. He never turns his mic on. Even when we ask him questions, he usually tells us off mic.
Even when we're not here and the show starts, Drew won't
That's
turn
right.
his
That's
that
right.
Is the, that is the one situation
he
where
says
Drew...
He's a board operator.
Justin Ferguson, you're going to have to break the tie here. We maintain that...
I'm saying that's what he says.
I know. That's why I want Ferg to chime in. Mm-hmm. If traffic or emergencies make it to where the show is starting and Drew is in the chair and both me and Bill, neither of us are here yet. He's got to bring the show in, right? It's got to be Drew's got to turn his mic on and do it.
Drew, I think you can lean on. Yeah. I think you can lean on the backstop of ESPN Radio.
Yeah, I think that's my call for you. I would do
a minute and then go to commercial. Yeah, and maybe a 10-minute long commercial.
We did a live show one time, and the place we were supposed to do it at 11 wasn't open. Like, they didn't open in time.
I remember that.
We had to drive back here. And I think whoever was in here just had to be like, all right, they'll be here in about 5 minutes.
Well,
and
now see
like,
what
here's
you
some
do then. If you'd really wanted to, I mean, you could have been on the phone while you were on the way.
What, one time, and it did not happen.
I've done that.
It did not happen here. This is not an Auburn Network situation, but I won't say where it happened. But I was setting up for a live broadcast. I'd set the equipment up. And as I was finished, you know, doing everything, 20-25 minutes to airtime, I get the call. Hey, we've moved the location of today's show. It's not going to be here. It's going to be somewhere else. Get there and get set up in time for airtime. And you scramble, but you the show must go on, right? I mean,
fortunately these days it's a lot easier with phones and the phone systems. Hopefully. That you can do that.
Yeah, we were using phones back then too, but they were, you know. It's like the America Online noise was involved, right? And you were plugging into portable modems and things like that. But that's not necessarily the case anymore.
We're all here actually in the studio.
That's right.
That's sort of a rarity for Bill, Dan, and Justin to be in the studio at the same time. Drew's at the controls. So we'd love for you to join in here on this Thursday edition of The Drive. And you can do so by calling The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. You heard his voice there just a second.
Ferg, you gonna check out any? You checking out any Braves this week?
They're on the road.
Are they in LA? Is that serious? I know they got the Dodger series coming up, but it's
It starts tomorrow. Yeah. They were in Seattle, and then now they're going to be in LA.
It was ESPN Radio. I don't believe it was the previous show, right? It was. Yeah,
nothing.
Yeah, no, I heard. I believe we were carrying ESPN Radio from the.
Yeah, last hour.
Yeah, the last
hour. Well, it's because Jacob was down in Grove Hill. Lee Scott was thumping, Clark
Academy. Yeah.
And I think we're now joining ESPN 106.7 in it's good to be here now on the.
They didn't hear any of the first 5 minutes.
I don't know.
A podcast exclusive. How about that?
Yeah, it was probably that was
podcast
on the
exclusive.
Podcast. Yes,
Drew's off the hook.
Well, not really.
No,
but
no, I mean for the whole having to talk. I meant for the whole having to talk if there's an emergency thing. That conversation never happened.
Yeah. Well, that's just sort of
we were on time.
Moot
today,
point there. That's right. We all got here. So my PSA that went.
I saw Dan walking in at 3:58, and I was like, "Good grief, what happened?"
That's right, baby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, I was barely ahead of him. Again, in case if you're listening here on ESPN 106.7. Be aware that Moores Mill Road is being resurfaced. So if you're headed in that direction, you might want to plan an alternate route. Wright's Mill Bridge is being worked on. I noticed last night as we passed by that the workers were out there in the evening still at around 8:30 or 9 o'clock last night. Hopefully it'll be done here before too long. They've said... it should be done before the estimate of 2 weeks is up. So, but anyway, just while
it's still amazing,
while school is still in for the city schools, and you know, graduation's coming up this weekend, there's still an awful lot of traffic.
Amazing that the accident late Friday, early Saturday, that no serious injuries, I guess, is the report from it. Because, an excavator hitting that bridge. And I mean, thankfully, I guess at the time of day, there wasn't much traffic out, because that could have been
real bad.
Yeah, it could have been a disaster. And still, you know, traffic ramifications several days later here on the here in Auburn.
All right, it's Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson.
Y'all should have like a traffic copter like sound.
We should. We, yeah. Yeah,
Drew, just, can you do that?
Yeah.
Just start hitting.
I like that.
I like
old school sound effects.
Captain. Yeah. Captain Dan back in the traffic copter.
Bring a little bit of the Bob Sanders show back to the Auburn of Lake areas with the noise. Now, Justin, is that something? That's maybe a little bit before your time.
Yeah, I don't know that reference.
We shared a studio with Bob, who was on the radio.
A century worth of air.
He was doing a show like that with he had
like
horn,
like a morning show.
He had horns and he had
birthday. He had the farm animals. Singing happy birthday.
He was the best. He was the best.
Yeah. No kid.
We always tried to do a soundboard, and we could just like we never like Painter was never quick enough on the trigger for it, so we decided to kind of punt on it. Yeah. But it makes a show a lot more fun.
Some of Rich's old sound effects, I'm sure, around here somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Oh yeah, for sure, absolutely.
All right, again, we'd love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about, sports wise. Where do we want to start today?
Well, I mean the portals have closed, and we could sort of. I mean, there's nothing.
The portal says. Mm-hmm.
Nothing earth shaking on an Auburn front. Although I suppose there could be a player.
Duke Miles could be any time. Although
Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, it's like after everybody felt like, well, you know, it sounds like Auburn's in great shape, and he's talking about what Auburn can do this next year, and he didn't plan any more visits. He's in Oklahoma now.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah. That was kind of a late move there, and be interested to see what Oklahoma lost a lot from this team, this past year's team. Obviously, trying to gear up for their move into the SEC. I really like the Duke Miles fit at Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, just a few days ago, it looked like, man, Auburn's got a great shot.
Yeah.
To have the two guys that you would just love to have plug in. But
not surprised about RJ Godfrey going to
me
Georgia.
Either. But yeah. I mean, the thing is, you're talking about Oklahoma. It may be mm-hmm. a similar situation where they could just say, "Hey, there's more playing time for you here."
Yeah, I like what Miles could bring to the table as a combo guard, you know, backup point guard. Can also play off the ball. He's a pretty mm-hmm. good off ball guy. And I think the best way I can describe Duke Miles to an Auburn fan who might be interested in what he could potentially bring to the table if he ends up coming here, is he's like if KD Johnson just was like, you know, had greater efficiency shooting the ball, and obviously coming from High Point, he had that. He's just great three-level scorer, but, I mean, plays with a ton of energy, drives really, really well. I mean, he shot nearly 70% at the rim, which is great for a 6'2 guard.
I'm not going to be shocked if KD's efficiency goes up when he drops down to the mid-major level.
Absolutely.
So I do wonder if mm-hmm. if it's maybe
stylistically though, there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, and maybe Duke doesn't
run very disruptive defender. Maybe
he doesn't run as hot and as cold as KD because who does? You know what I mean? Like that's you know sort of a unique you know thing to KD's personality.
But at High Point, you know, the level of competition was different. I think Georgia was the only top 100 team they played all year.
I would worry about, because so much is made, we were talking about this with Jason yesterday, like I would worry about if you a veteran mid-major guard having to make the change to Bruce Pearl's system. But with Duke Miles... Well, with Duke Miles, I mean, Scott Cross is running a really pressure, high pressure system,
and he was really good there too.
When he got to play, that's right.
He had those two seasons that were really wrecked by injury.
Three seasons as a Scott Cross guard would tell me like, oh, he knows what he's stepping into, and he's probably physical enough to
a lot of steals.
A lot of steals.
Very disruptive defender, and that's my thing though. I came out of this past season for Auburn basketball basically saying, look, I'm not going to question Auburn's ability, Bruce Pearl's ability to get his guys to play defense. Because we spent all last offseason talking about defense. I mean, and Pearl was the chief one voicing those concerns. Mm-hmm. And then they have the best defense they've had ever, analytically, this past season. Even better than the one that had Walker Kessler on it. Like, that's how good they were on the defensive end. So, I think you can transition. Also, if you're experienced, but like you said, Dan, playing at Troy, High Point was not a very good defensive team last year. They were much more offensive, you know, leaning than defense. But he is coming from a place where I think Troy was a top 100 defense all 3 years he was at. He was with the Trojans, which is a good foundation. But some of his numbers are crazy. I think he had – I looked it up. He's played – he's nearly a quarter of his games in college, he's had at least three steals in them. Like, wow. just crazy numbers in terms of disruption. Plays pretty physically. If you watch him on offense, you could see where that can kind of translate on defense. But, you know, like I said, like Auburn's it ain't a slam dunk now with Oklahoma making this charge for him.
Yeah, it sure felt like yesterday afternoon that this is an anytime, any minute.
I had everything prepped for, you know, a commitment from him. And that might still happen. It's just, you know, Oklahoma really is going to make him think about it.
I don't blame him for taking a look at, another – SEC school, really? That's interested.
That could end up giving him some more playing time, right? That's the thing with this Auburn team, and people are. It's an interesting question because I think people are looking at. And Dan and I have talked about this. Alabama is in this mode right now where they're just getting everyone. I don't know how they're all going to play together. I really don't.
I don't know how they're all going to get minutes.
Yeah, Kansas is in the same.
And I think the freshmen.
I guess get as many good players as you can and. See how it shakes out.
And yeah, I would say that the freshmen and sophomores and the unproven players at Alabama, and I would probably put Aiden in that group, too.
I would definitely put Aiden
after 1 year at Auburn. Like, I'd say those are the guys at greatest risk of being lost in the shuffle because would think that veterans with track records are going to. But maybe – I keep thinking with Alabama in particular, like maybe they've sold Holloway and Filon on no matter how much or how little you play this year – you're in pole position to be the starters in 25.
Which is an interesting gambit because it's the portal era where you can leave at any time. And it's harder to sell the future. I think about Johan Treyor, I think about Chance Westry, I think about some guys that Auburn's had here recently where it's like, oh, they would have been key players for us if they'd have stayed, but like they looked around and said, why stay now?
Those players can leave at any time, and Nate Oates can sign their replacements after the season is over if he decides there's better, more proven options out there. Like, it's so hard to go with an understudy, even at the quarterback position. And I guess Carson Beck would be the best example of this working out, Milroe to an extent, where it's like, yeah, you're going to spend a year as the backup, and then you're going to step into the starter's role, and you're going
to
thrive.
But there's a reason why the only teams that are able to do that are the superpowers. Because you are willing to wait around because at one point you feel like, oh, well, I'm going to walk into a machine, you know, by the time I'm a junior.
For a national championship and everybody's going to see me every game.
It's tougher to sell that. It's tougher to sell that at everywhere else, basically. And
anywhere in basketball. The thought that you could be like, yeah, you know, wait, give it a year.
I think Auburn's in this situation right now. We saw it with R.J. Godfrey, and I think you could potentially see it here if the Duke Miles situation goes in a different direction. What you're seeing here is that, Auburn is in a really good spot as a roster right now. I wrote about it earlier this week. Auburn is returning more points this season, this upcoming season. They'll return more points from the previous team than they had since the SEC title team that became the Final Four team. So when they are in a really good spot, especially in this day and age where everybody leaves. They're in a really good spot, but when you're in that really good spot, you can't just sit here and say, let's go get the best of the best because the best of the best are going to want to start, you know, and you're in a spot where, you know, if you believe in Chaney Johnson, which by all indications Auburn does, you want to go get another forward to go compete with him, whether that is, you know, what they were trying to do with Godfrey. Although I think Godfrey might end up playing the three at Georgia from talking to some folks there this week.
I keep thinking this offseason. Yeah,
they feel better at the four with Asa Newell coming.
Yeah, he just really hasn't shot many shots outside, you know, 12.
Yeah, I think Georgia's going to play that kind of bully ball.
And look, if Auburn comes away with Duke Miles and a forward who is in demand.
Saunders is the new one to watch from San Diego State.
What about the Samford big guy?
The Samford big guy will be interesting, too. I don't know if I've heard anything if Auburn's actually contacted him. That would be another great example. You got to find somebody, and Godfrey was like that. Saunders is like that, too. Guys that are willing to come off the bench, but they're good doing it at great programs. Like, Clemson went to the Elite Eight. San Diego State's been awesome these last couple of years. You got to go find guys like that. And you're not going to be able to just go in and say, hey, you're the best available. Let's go grab them. Because guys are going to want to be promised things. And that's not Auburn's MO, especially with the roster they've got coming
back. And this offseason has been – maybe this will be the norm now. But I still feel like this has been a unique offseason as far as the number of high-profile places that made coaching changes.
Oh, yeah.
And the number of high-profile coaches who made switches to now. It's like, yeah, you've got Eric Musselman and John Calipari and Andy Enfield. And, I mean, coaches with NIL resources behind them and no roster. Like stepping into places with Mark Pope at Kentucky, stepping into a place where there's no and you have to compete. If you're competing for guys that they want,
it was Kentucky and Arkansas did not keep a single player.
No, and they've and I kind of like. I'm not going to go crazy, but it reminds me a little bit of what Chris Beard did last year. I like the combination of players Mark Pope has assembled in year one. We were talking yesterday, like he's with the
meanwhile at Arkansas, Cal's been able to poach a bunch of that class he was going to bring in at Kentucky.
And I like going and getting Naidu from Tennessee if you're starting over in the SEC and you want to win right now, because that's a competitive SEC post. That, you know, I don't know how many of them there were out there, you know, coming of the productive SEC post from last year. I don't know how many of them are back in college basketball. I don't know how many of them went in the portal. And to go get one, I think is a nice pickup for Calipari in year one.
All right, we need to get to our first break here of the afternoon. Just getting underway here on the Thursday Drive. Come on in and join us.
At Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air.
Live with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. As we mentioned, yes, the entries to the portal, have stopped with the exception of graduates. Now, something I had not realized, though, until a week or so ago was that the SEC doesn't want graduate transfers to be able to hop from one SEC school to another. After this point, they had to be in the portal as well.
Yeah, that to me seems like common sense as well. Just, I mean, that there are different rules for different, you know, different transfers. I get being eligible immediately, but like the whole thing about having a window, you know, opening and closing, is that you can you can understand what your roster is doing. You can have a better sense of your roster management. You're not having to be like, well, and then at some point in the summer, two guys could leave, and then we have to bring in somebody else. Like, so I like it if everybody was under
they
the same.
They can still leave. They just can't go to another SEC school and play.
Yeah, and that's even tougher. You know, the interconference transfers are – I can see why coaches don't want anything to do with that.
My concern, I mean, is the thought that by making it to where they can't switch between SEC schools, they're more likely to stay at their current school because they don't want to leave the conference entirely? Is that sort
no,
of the thing?
I think it's they don't want – I think it's that coaches just kind of want to not have to run into their ex-players.
That makes sense, too. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I guess there was some consideration for like
especially at the last minute, especially these late moves. Yeah.
If they're on the schedule, you know, especially, I guess that would be in – but no, it's
– Specifically, I'm thinking like if you go through spring ball and then you hop into the portal and you want to go to – you know, another an SEC rival or whatever. Like, I'm sure coaches are paranoid that they're going to give all their secrets away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's strange.
I mean, you spend the spring trying to install certain things, and it's like, well, you'd have to go back and maybe change quite a bit of them when you've got players jumping to teams that you might be playing.
What did that guy know, and how much do we need to change that because we have to play his team in week 7?
The other sort of curious thing about that rule or any of these rules is that they seem to have a terrible record when challenged in court, right? Like a lot of these restrictions of like what players can and can't do.
That's the thing, is like the SEC stuff always holds up. Like, nobody ever really challenges it because I think it's like everybody kind of just moves along. Whereas with the NCAA, they will just rip those things in half.
One of the reasons is because the other schools have agreed to that, so you're not getting schools trying to poach other SEC players because they've all agreed. They don't want that happening to them.
Correct. Yeah, and that's where you start to think like what the future of college athletics is going to be when you go to like a conference when the power conferences are running everything. That might become a little bit more streamline and get instead of what we've got right now, which is every man for themselves and no holes barred and all that. I did find it interesting this week, though, the report that the NCAA might in an act of self-preservation try to come up with a revenue sharing model
that. Well, it looks like the SEC and the Big Ten are just going ahead. I mean, they're the ones pushing this thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the
makes sense.
We talked a little bit. I mean, and again, not trained in the law here at all, but the what I understand of the House versus NCAA lawsuit is that you have former athletes suing for what is essentially back pay.
Yep.
If you know, because they weren't allowed to collect on NIL during their time as student athletes, and then you also have current athletes suing because they say that what restrictions still exist limit their ability to earn against their NIL. And if the NCAA wants to settle, I guess if they want to go to trial, it could be existential because they could lose. And that's the lawsuit where, because it's antitrust, the damages would be tripled. And if the NCAA lost that lawsuit in court, they could be on the hook for $4 billion plus dollars in damages. But if they settle, they would have to settle with the current athletes suing. And a lot of folks believe that a settlement with the current athletes would involve something akin to revenue sharing being implemented in college football.
It's where everything's
going. That's the lawsuit that goes to trial in January. The belief is that we're probably going to get a settlement. The Pete Thamel had. Now, I did think the Pete Thamel report sounded like it was very sourced from one side. Like it was a trial balloon of how would this settlement go? It felt like when we were talking about the Super League article. Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of this is coming from the Super League itself, and there's not a lot of the SEC and the Big Ten don't think this is a very good idea at all. It's just one line. In that story.
That was the thing about the Super League one where it was like, here's all this grand plan, and then in the middle of the story, there's one line that says it's not going to happen because the two biggest conferences are never going to agree to this.
The SEC and the Big Ten were told that they would even meeting with the Super League could be seen as their broadcast partners because the Super League would involve walking away from all your current broadcast deals to strike new ones, and even meeting with the Super League would upset ESPN and Fox and with the amount of money that those folks are paying,
they're set. The Super League whole concept makes sense if you're the Big 12 or the ACC,
and they may have missed the window for the live sports are going to save the day. There was a wave of cable networks and television networks thinking, well, as long as we have live sports, people will stop cutting the cord and people will stop moving to new forms of entertainment. And that's and now the streamers are getting in on which could bring about a new wave of competition, because it could be the same competition but with new people sitting at the table.
Yeah. It's going to be with Amazon and Apple and Netflix.
Exactly. It's going to be the streamers ESPN instead of Fox. Yeah. And that could be where this is headed. But in the meantime, I think that the folks who have already made their broadcast deals and the folks making broadcast deals right now, I'd say the NBA looks like they're going to be very happy with the end result of the deals they're making right now. It's anything.
It'd be wild if it ends up back on NBC.
Bill Simmons is plugged in to these things, and he seems to think that Warner Brothers Discovery is going to be TNT is going to be the odd man out, losing their coverage.
I can see that.
And with that, I mean, not to make this a media rights deal show, but if TNT loses, TNT right now is getting about $3 per subscriber from the if you pay your cable bill every month, and your package includes the TNT network, your cable provider is sending TNT about $3 on your behalf.
TNT or just Turner?
TNT. I think TNT right now is at about $3. That's largely because of the NBA. In-demand programming they have is because of the NBA. It becomes a sort of a dicier proposition.
Yeah.
Is it a dollar?
They don't
is
have 75 yeah, cents. If they don't have the NBA, they become.
And that's yeah
USA
exactly or, you know. USA with yeah I mean so so it's I think
or you'll that, have some sports but not a ton,
right? And I think between they're deciding if the amount of money they would have to spend on the NBA is worth how much of their revenue, they're making that sort of decision, but in the meantime they could lose the NBA
to me entirely. The answer is yes. It's the NBA.
And I guess someone reported earlier today that, and I guess Barkley said this in an interview a long time ago, but if if the NBA no longer has, if TNT is no longer showing in the NBA, I guess it like the Barkley, that whole show, they have the opportunity to explore other opportunities with limited control from TNT about where they can go. And it could be just like what happened with Aikman and Fox, where yeah. ESPN says, hey, we're showing more NBA, bring the whole team over, and you take a signature piece of Warner Brothers Discovery and Turner Sports, and you just put it on a network and take it away from them.
Could easily happen.
It's gonna,
especially with the amount of money you're playing with here, especially with Disney and Fox are kind of working together.
Amazon has no current NBA team. Like, think about that too. I mean, they're bringing over, you know, they've taken a significant chunk.
They started doing the MLB ones.
They have an overtime elite broadcast team, but it's probably not going to translate over. Like, Amazon would be in the market for splashy names to add to their NBA package.
They've taken over the streaming rights of a lot of MLB teams, especially with Diamond going down. So yeah, it could get really interesting real quickly, because the further and further we go down the line, the less and less people are going to have basic cable, satellite, or anything like that. It's just going to be streaming, and then it'll become I think it's going to become less of the YouTube TV, you know, that kind of thing, and more of the you pay these people directly, you know, to have ESPN.
Direct to consumer, you know, is it similar to what's happened to newspapers? In that it used to be you paid a newspaper, and now maybe you pay a couple of your favorite journalists, or you pay content providers directly rather than paying a newspaper to read all of
The only difference is that the corporations are still getting paid and all that. Happening quite as much in the newspaper world.
Funny how that works.
All right, we're going to get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390 or text us. 334-564-1840 here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. It's the Thursday edition. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. While we got a couple of minutes, just talk about what all you've been doing there at the Observer, what's coming up, how folks can get it.
Yeah, you can check out a couple stories we've done this week. I did a breakdown, like I was talking about earlier, about how much Auburn's bringing back this year and how that's a good omen in basketball for the upcoming year. Really, really good parallels, especially when you start talking about returning experience and how much that matters and has mattered to not just Auburn but some really good SEC programs recently. You can check that out. Also had a
there been a recent parallel as far as a team winning like Auburn did this season and bringing back as much of that team the following year in conference play? Because I'm wondering this past year's Tennessee team.
Okay. They obviously added Dalton Kennect, who ended up being the big game changer. But Auburn is really kind of following the Tennessee model here. They added others, like Jordan Gainey was another one they picked up, you know, from this team. But yeah, basically bring back a bulk of your roster, even when you lose some key guys, obviously like Julian Phillips and dudes like that moved on from those guys from that Tennessee team. But they brought back a core, added a couple of pieces to round out that roster, and just ran it back and was, you know, Tennessee last season, one of the most experienced teams in the SEC, one of the most had some of the greatest continuity of any teams in the SEC. It really, really worked out.
Almost went to the Final Four, too, top of everything they did in the regular season,
I also did a story on Jeremiah Cobb, and I just kind of wrote about why I think he has the potential to have a really good season at Auburn, even if he is not the lead guy at running back. And, you know, one of the things that stood out is that, you know, Jeremiah Cobb scored a touchdown on 10% of his touches last season, which is really crazy to think about.
How many touches do you think he can legitimately get, though? I mean, how do you not?
Yeah.
I mean, there were some people thinking Brian Batie might go back into the portal.
Right.
He had gone in. I mean, he's a guy, I feel like he's going to get some touches. You know that
Jarquez
and Damari are going to get some. I mean, I just
You know, I think it's going to be one of those things, especially with a new running backs coach and a new offense, where you let it play out and you ride the hot hand when it comes. And I think Jeremiah Cobb, if he gets those opportunities early in the season, he could be a guy that maybe not becomes, you know, RB1 for him this year. But my thing with Cobb is just I think it's just you're banking on talent there. And he talked a lot in the spring about how he didn't play that much because he didn't really know the playbook as well. I mean, you got to keep in mind, he did not enroll early last year because he couldn't. Montgomery Catholic wouldn't let guys graduate early. So I think it's one of those things where a full off season should be really beneficial for him. And, I mean, his numbers last season, when you look at, you know, kind of the explosiveness, you know, yards after contact, stuff like that, kind of diving the numbers, he was among Auburn. It's like him and Jarquez pretty much 1-2 and everything. Yeah, I mean, I think he's a guy, especially with his way he can catch out of the backfield. That's a way I think you can find ways to get him on the field without him necessarily being
I agree. I want to see more of him.
Yeah, oh no, I think a lot of people do too.
It's tough when you got four or five guys.
It's gonna be interesting to see how they fill out all those roles. And again, I think with Derek Nix coming in, you see maybe where a hot hand kind of approach might be the way to go. The other thing I found interesting in doing the research for that story is that you know, Freeze's second year at Ole Miss, they made a pretty big jump in the passing game from year one to year two. And one of the biggest differences they made from year one to year two with Derek Nix as running backs coaches, their running backs caught a ton of passes that year. I think they combined for nearly like 60 catches, their running backs. And it was several guys. I think Jeff Scott was still there, Itavius Mathers. There's one more I'm blanking on right now. But you know, that could be a way where if you're going to go by a committee approach, one of the things that I think could separate Jeremiah Cobb from the rest of those guys is the fact that he is a really good, you know, receiver out of the backfield. And even last year, I think it was something around like 40%, maybe less than that, or it was like around 40% of his snaps last season didn't even come in the backfield. He was lined up in the slot. He was lined up out wide. They used him in motion. I think that's a really fun way to get him on the field because he's one of those guys that a lot of people thought – like was going to, you know, a few years ago, this was kind of the thing everybody was talking about in the NFL, that it was like, we don't have running backs anymore. We have just football players. We have athletes. And you look at guys like Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara, where it was just like, you use them as running back receiver types. That's not as popular as people thought it was going to be by now, but he is one of those types of dudes where it's that old, they don't use this in recruiting as much anymore, but it's the old all-purpose back,
right?
You know, archetype. It's a really good one to have because it's not the Jarquez Hunter and Damari Austin, and definitely not Brian Battee. It's not like those guys aren't versatile and can't catch the ball. All of them have proven they can do that. Cobb's just got a little bit different. Like he's got more experience doing that because he did that a ton in high school. Like he caught I want to say it was like 40 or 50 passes in his senior year at Catholic, on top of, you know, running for nearly 2,000 yards, you know, and he's a special player. But so yeah, it's just a story of why I think he's got a really good potential to break out this year. Even if he's not the guy, I think he's just one of those dudes where, kind of like with the rest of this offense, you're just banking on talent to win out. And when you were as rough as you were on offense this past year, especially through the air, I mean, it should be an open door for a lot of these guys to get after it.
I mentioned, you know, that there'd been some talk of perhaps Battee entering the trap. Were you surprised? We asked Jason this yesterday. Were you surprised that there weren't any more players from Auburn entering the portal?
Yeah, the Coy Moore departure was one I thought was going to be coming for a while, especially after they got Keandre Lambert Smith, because that seemed to be like the role that Moore would have played. Colton Hood was the surprise,
right?
And then, but it all makes sense in the end, especially when you see that he's going to Colorado and he wanted to play with his brother and he's going to get that opportunity to do that. Auburn really wasn't recruiting his brother as much. And I'm never going to fault a kid for wanting to play with his family.
I'm not sure how much the roster, like if you think about like when the portal closed back in December, January, like I'm not sure how much the depth chart has truly changed from then to now, to where I feel like a lot of guys, they knew what they were signing up for.
Yeah. I just felt like maybe a couple of guys that were down the line a little bit on the depth chart might have thought of jumping.
But
in.
Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned Batie. You know, I don't want to sit here and say, hey, this guy needs to go, this guy doesn't. But when you enter the portal and you look around and come back and you go through spring, it's like you always look at that guy and it's like, eh, maybe he'll jump back in. He didn't. And that's good because he is – I mean, we'll see what he does in this offense as a running back. He had that good stretch in the middle of the year last year, kind of faded down. Mm-hmm. He's still one of the best kick returners in the country, you know, statistically. So
we had callers, love to have that. We had callers ask about Holden and and Walker as guys who, you know, maybe they would look to transfer because they're not the starter.
Maybe not Walker.
Going in, but I would say – Hank, yeah, maybe Hank, not Walker. Yeah, Walker's incoming freshman. But the idea of Holden and Hank because
kind of wild. he gets there in the spring. Like, wow, nope, no same for me.
I mean, it wouldn't be crazy. You've seen it. I mean, Southern Cal had one of the top offensive linemen of the country.
And it's a little different. But Auburn just took advantage of that with Isaiah Rakes too, where it was just like, he went through a few weeks.
I don't know what was going on at Southern Cal, but they had three or four guys that had only been there since January that went in the portal at the end of spring.
And then they go get Jay Fair. And, like, I think Jay Fair can be a really good receiver, but it was just really interesting to see, like, who prioritized what in those kind of situations.
And I think in the case of Holden and Hank, they both, you could say, without knowing the exact situation, their best shot at playing time is either go into this season and see what happens, mm-hmm. or go somewhere else in January and compete to try to be the starter. But you're probably not going to find more playing time switching teams right now, unless you're dropping down to the, like, I think,
or
the,
you're a guy like Peyton Thorne who had played a lot somewhere else
without a track record as a quarterback. Yep. You know, without playing time and film you can point to and a lot of it. I think it's tough to go somewhere at the D1 level. Go somewhere and unseat a bunch of quarterbacks that just went through spring practice. Like, people think, like Coy Moore can probably find the right bowl subdivision program and get some playing time this fall.
Yeah,
I feel like a quarterback switching teams right now,
it's tough.
Better have you better be the no doubt about it starter. Yeah. Like when you step forward.
Well, there's a reason why TJ Finley was able to make that quick switch to Texas State and have a pretty good year there. Now he's at Western now. It's tougher, but he had done it. He had started. He had started at LSU and he had started at Auburn. It's tougher for guys like Holden and Hank who have barely played at this point. Good quarterbacks, but just have barely played.
334-321-1390. Oh, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
It's time to stop dealing with ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes of hour number one. Bill, Dan, and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Had a little time with Butch Thompson and a couple of players this morning. Yeah. Auburn baseball's got Ole Miss coming in this weekend. And he was saying, you know, it's like he'd said this a week or two ago, but Auburn's got to treat this like this is the postseason. Because you lose this series, and even though you have a couple more, you may not be officially eliminated. Although I'd say if you lose this series, you probably are all but eliminated from making the SEC tournament. So you got to play it. I was asking him, do you sort of play it like it's a tournament every week now for the final three weekends?
It's not the situation you'd like to be in with nine games left in the season. You know, fighting to make it to Hoover. But Auburn, that's where they are. And as Coop said on Monday, the teams they need to beat the most right now, the teams that they're competing with to make the SEC tournament, are the teams they're going to see these next couple of weeks. And so it's an opportunity, and that could start with a strong showing this weekend. Because you're right, this will an Ole Miss series win this weekend. And you start to feel like you're not just playing out the last six, but you do feel like the SEC tournament is maybe out of reach.
No, I mean you're three games out of 13th right now. Yeah. You lose this one, not only do you lose another, you lose another game to one of those two teams that's ahead of you. Ole Miss is four games ahead of Auburn. So, I mean, even if Auburn wins two out of three, they're still three games back of Ole Miss. But they would at least have the tiebreaker if they could catch up those three. You lose the series, you're another game back, and you also don't have the tiebreaker. So it's very important. And Auburn's got pretty good starting pitching the last couple of weekends. Dylan Watts, one of the players that we had a chance to talk to for a little bit, you know, came in as a reliever. He's pitched really well last week, you know, nine strikeouts and no walks in five innings against LSU. So he'll get the start tomorrow night here at Auburn. All right, we'll get to our top of the hour break. Just halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Come on in for hour number two.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this May 2nd. Hard to believe, man. Here we are already into the month of May. Didn't even talk about that yesterday. But yeah, the temperature's feeling like it. I think it was around 87 or 88 today. It's going to be pretty warm.
We're about 120 days out from... Kids don't want to hear this. Graduation week. Finals week. But what are we, about 120 days out from the football game? Something like that? Four months almost on the...
I don't know.
I mean, it will... Just make note of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Because it will... Not long from now... It'll be like, wow, there's a football game coming up pretty soon, and it's like that. It's going to fly by. We're right.
Dan, we're trying to look forward to the part of the year where there's not as many people here.
Sure.
I am looking forward.
Especially Bill's traffic report.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Bill traffic report.
In case you weren't able to
really helpful.
To hear early on. I mean,
yeah.
Seriously,
pay attention.
Morris Mill Road is being resurfaced out at the right near Ogletree.
So take the right section. Take the Wrightsville Bridge, then obviously.
Jump it.
Yeah, just go on past the Wrightsville Bridge on University till you get to college, or go further on down past Moores Mill to Bent Creek if you're going to try to get south. Because yes,
Or you pop over to Tigertown. You cross over.
Well,
there
that's further, a little further down. That's right.
You over by the movie theater and the new.
Come on back, Hamilton.
That restaurant / always Ogletree. Packed. Always packed. The Roadhouse, across the street from the movie theater now, that is packed 24/7.
There's a lot.
I haven't been to those theaters in a while. I've been to the ones in Auburn lately.
It's a good movie theater.
I like the one in Opelika.
And then
I do, but it's just the timing.
Solid gas station over there too. One of our favorites.
Multiple, actually.
I thought you were about to say something.
Oh no, that was
no.
That was,
yeah. Traffic.
Anyway, yeah. So that was our little traffic update for today.
A local show.
Well, it is. I mean. It was guaranteed. It was affecting hundreds of cars today at around 3:30 as I was trying to make it into for the show. Hour number one of the books. We'd love for you to join in. We talked with Justin a good bit about the transfer portal. More specifically, we talked more basketball. Auburn is awaiting word now. Duke Miles, the guard from Montgomery, and then Troy and High Point. Was his last stop, visiting Oklahoma now, and we don't know for sure that that's his last visit because it appeared Auburn was going to be, you know, the only visit.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about it earlier, like it could be a situation where playing time, you know, weigh out some options because, you know, you would think that Duke Miles, if he came to Auburn, probably going to be a guy off the bench, probably going to be a guy who helps lead your second unit. There could be opportunities to play at a really good program and maybe get some more playing time. So you got to weigh out all those options. But obviously Auburn, the success they've had with mid-major guys, being close to home, I think those are going to be really, really strong factors.
We
thought about that a little yesterday. That's something that's really worked well, finding some guys that from the state of Alabama that have gone and played and want to get that opportunity to play in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, you did it twice last year with Chaney and Denver. could do it again here with a guy like Duke Miles, and I think the fit there is great, especially when you talk about, you know, if they end up signing him, you look at four guards next season for Auburn, all of them could play one or two. And I think that versatility could be really, really special, especially when you're trying to come out with a rotation.
I don't know a ton about Oklahoma's playing, you know, Oklahoma's situation in the backcourt right now and what they bring back or what else they've attracted. I was a little worried in the Duke Miles front that somebody with more playing time to offer could come knocking for.
And it
for
could
Duke.
Be Oklahoma.
I mean Duke was the leading scorer on a D1 program.
He led. Here's a crazy stat I saw. He led the Big South in field goal percentage.
Yeah.
As a guard.
Right.
As a shot heavy guard.
Yeah. As a guard who takes his fair share of threes. I mean, yeah. Still. Not a ton of them, but willing to gun it out there.
Did a really good job this past season.
I mean, I think he's a really interesting piece and a. I mean, I do wonder with so many places still looking for, and it's the numbers going down every day because players are making announcements and teams are making moves, but with so many places like still looking for starters.
You got to keep in mind with Duke Miles, look at the number of teams that reached out to him in the beginning. It was everybody. Like he had a huge list of programs, and yeah, I mean, their odds are there are going to be ones that could offer more playing time than Auburn.
But there could still be, I mean, there could be quite a few minutes, especially if Auburn's caught. I mean, Pegues and Miles together is a little bit small, but I don't think it's anything smaller than Bruce's run with before.
Bigger than when you were last year.
Exactly. I mean, you ran KD at the two last year. Like, yeah. I mean, so I don't think Bruce is afraid to run somebody who's an effective offensive player with defensive skills. Like, it's not, to me, like, it's... The playing time stuff with Duke, I do wonder, you know, when you're talking about forwards, like it's questionable how much playing time is available for Auburn when they make. But I do wonder in the case of somebody like
especially
Duke,
with Chris Moore coming back,
like you could be talking about starter versus reserve, but there could be quite a few minutes available for Duke Miles, even though Auburn
you got 80 minutes to carve up between you know your two guard spots. Yeah, you can figure that could be really easily.
And with KD moving on, you opened up some minutes too in the backcourt on top. Yeah. I mean, on top of like you look at from like if KD were still.
Oh, you still need another point guard. You still need somebody who can play point guard.
Right. Yes. And the thing is, especially
when you're talking about especially if you're not going to play Tahad on ball as much.
Right. Now they might. And if you brought Duke in, he'd be the second biggest of your four guards. I mean, he's you know he's at 6'2", 6'3". He's bigger than either JP or Tahad.
No, I think there would be. I mean, there might be places with more wide open situations in the backcourt, but I feel like Duke could still be like there's a clear role, and crucially, if he wants to play another, if he's available to play another year of college basketball, and if he wants to, because there is the question of can he take a red shirt on the year where he only played six games?
Yeah,
if he wanted to play a second year, it's wide open after the season is over, and he could be. He could be a bridge.
And I think he can play another year.
I think he should be able to.
Because he medically redshirted one of those years.
Yes, he played. There was a year he only played six games for Troy. Yeah.
And that was a medical redshirt. Yeah, they came out and said
his freshman year was the COVID year.
Yeah. And the Trojans played more than 30 games that season. So he would meet the requirement.
They officially said he was medically redshirted.
Oh, then he does have two years if he wants.
So one would think he would be a redshirt junior officially, or I guess you could say a senior.
He was listed as a junior at High Point last year, but yeah.
Yeah, so he'd be a senior, but he'd be able to get that. He'd be able to get the COVID year.
Senior with an asterisk, because he's a senior with an extra year of eligibility.
Yeah, not that super senior or whatever you want to call him. Now, we were talking about the other guys. Elijah Saunders, you talk about a list of schools.
Yeah.
Did you see his free throw numbers last year?
Saunders, I believe he went 26 of 27 from the free throw line last season. Okay. That's for a 6'8" guy.
Wow! I thought you were going to give me 26 of 67 or something. 100. Like that.
Yeah, it was like 26 of 27 or something like that. Like he only missed one free throw all year.
He had a long list of schools that had immediately contacted him.
I mean. I would love to, if I was trying to fill out my roster and there was a dude in the portal from San Diego State, I'd be I could use that.
Can you give him as many minutes as he got at San Diego State?
Mm.
See, that's yeah. the thing I wonder.
Well, here's
about.
My thing about everything they're going to do at Forward this upcoming year. When you look at Chaney, and the plan is for Chaney to be the guy next year, be the starter. But I, knowing Auburn and knowing Bruce Pearl, he is going to these guys and saying, you're going to come in and compete. We will be a competition. I mean, you look at even last year, this past season, you know, Bruce talked about how Chaney Johnson battled Jalen for that starting forward job all offseason. And it was always probably always was going to be Jalen starting that, but like it is that thing where some of these guys are want to go into the portal and say, this is exactly what you're going to get. You are going to be our starter. You're going to get X, Y, and Z. And Bruce has talked about how, as a program, he believes in bringing guys in and being very honest with them, say, hey, you're probably not going to play 36 minutes a game if you play here. You're going to have to compete. You're going to have to battle. You're going to have to win these jobs. And I think when you get into these situations where you're trying to bring in another forward, try to bring in another guard, that could work for you because you could say, hey, well, we have a guy that we think could be the starter now, or you know, has been here, but the competition is going to be there, and you can take some of those minutes for sure, and who knows, maybe even start. As Auburn saw last season, Jalen Williams goes down. They're really glad that they were able to sell Chaney Johnson on those opportunities.
Well, Dylan Cardwell was telling us, remember during the year, Dylan told us that in the preseason they thought that Chaney was as impressive as anybody on the team, and then he just couldn't get a shot to fall early on and really lost his confidence.
And the last 10, 11 games a year, he played really well. I mean, his numbers were strong down the stretch. And it's the athleticism there with him. And you know, you bank on that, though. That power forward spot is a tough position to play in a Bruce Pearl system because of what all you are asked to do. You're a big man on defense. You have to do a lot of big man stuff on offense, but you're essentially a guard for a lot of it. And it took Jalen Williams a couple of years to get settled into that spot. And it's why one of the only first year guys that have ever made it work so quickly at that spot is Jabari Smith, because it's Jabari Smith. Even Jumo Okeke needed that second year to really kind of blow up. In that power forward spot. So I think you can see a similar track there for Chaney.
I think Chaney also, I mean, I wondered in the case of Janai, you didn't see it as much with Denver, but sometimes like there are pros and cons to reaching to the mid-major level or lower for players. And I think sometimes guys, Wendell, I thought was a great example of this, where the first year Wendell was on the team, he was doing a lot of stuff that worked at Eastern Kentucky, but wasn't working against bigger, stronger, more physical SEC defenders. And I think Chaney took a little while to figure out what he could bring from the D2 level that worked in the SEC and what wasn't going to work in the SEC. And with Chaney, he also had to deal with, I mean, he was, I didn't watch a lot of Chaney at AUM, but I would think that's not right. It was Huntsville.
UAH.
I didn't watch a lot of Chaney at
Three
UAH.
Letters.
Yeah,
two of them are right.
Thank you. I didn't watch a lot of Chaney at UAH. I would imagine he was a focal point for other teams. Like, you were trying to stop Chaney Johnson, the all-conference player. It was almost at Auburn this past year. There were times when defenses were daring Chaney Johnson to make the play. They were giving up unfavorable looks to Chaney. They were giving up, you know, sort of daring Chaney to punish the defense for it. And towards the end of the season, he got much better at getting himself into situations where he could. And it was you didn't see Chaney wide open as much towards the end of the year from, you know, defenses tried that and then realized, oh, that's not going to work.
By the way, final 11 games, 12 games of the season, his mid-range jumper was about as automatic as you can get. And him and Chad have that level where, you know, when we talk about one of the reasons why I think Auburn's offense was as good as it was this past season, is that they had an ability at times to just go get that. Like, everybody, you know, modern basketball, it's protect the rim, run people off the three-point line. Nobody's taking mid-range jumpers. Don't worry about it as much. If Auburn has several guys who could go hit that shot, you think about, Jalen had that little nerf shot that he liked to hit, that little turnaround that it, you know, kind of floater. That's another thing. Duke Miles has a really good mid-range shot as well. JP Pegues, really good mid-range. Mm-hmm. I think that's just like when you talk about building a well-rounded offense and not just one that just sells out to a couple shots on the floor. It's pretty special. And Chaney, I mean, I don't think a lot of people, especially with the way he struggled shooting the ball early in the year, I don't think people thought down the stretch that Chaney Johnson would be one of those guys where he catches the ball on the elbow or in the short corner, he can make one move and pull that shot, and that is a good look. That is a look that they were going to hit, because for most of the year it was just like, he's not really taking those shots or hitting those shots, you know. But it's his confidence down. But man, he was really good down the stretch.
It seemed like every time that I had an opportunity to go over and hear Bruce, Chaney was in there shooting.
Always. There was a, and I wrote about this recently, there was a practice, and it was right before, I think it was right before the SEC tournament. I think it was right before they left for the SEC tournament. And they had a practice, and they went hard. It was really hard, really physical practice. I mean, guys were worn out, exhausted at the end of it. They're on the main floor. I'm up, you know, watching practice and working. And practice is over. They break off. And then 5 minutes later, you see Chaney dragging in the shooting gun.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, I mean, like, looks like, I mean, at the point of working as hard at practice, it looks like he'd just been swimming. Like, that's how sweaty he was. Dude's up there just getting shots up. And it's like, he did that so consistently because he was a guy that, you know, at D2, you have to do that. You have to grind at that point. And then it's like, all right, you make that step up to the SEC. But his shot, he really, really worked on his shot. I know Bruce talked a lot about how his work with Ira Bowman and with Marquise Daniels was huge for his development.
And I know he was sensitive. I know Dylan said something to this extent during the season that Chaney was sensitive about the idea that defenses were leaving him open and the defenses were sort of daring him to be, you know, treating him like the weak link offensively and as someone who didn't need to be covered. And you've seen enough basketball, Justin. When a guy backs off you, when you got the ball at the 3-point line or you got the ball at the free throw line, you know, team backs off you because they don't think you're going to hit that shot. Like, that's a message being sent to a D1 player.
And that's the thing with Chaney and with this team next season. If you come back next year, Jani Broome's back. By the way, they just posted pictures on Twitter. Jani's name's now on the wall in the practice gym as an All American. They updated that banner today. That's really cool. But you bring back an All American in Jani. You bring back two guys in Denver Jones and Chad Abrams-Azar who were playing really good basketball towards the end of the year. They really caught fire, especially Denver down the stretch. You add J.P. Pegues, and if your fifth option on offense is a guy in Chaney Johnson who played really well towards the end of the year, probably the best athlete on the floor every time he steps out there, and a guy that, you know, has gained a lot of confidence with his shot, that shows you how scary this team can be, because, you know, a guy like Chaney is capable. As we saw the Georgia game, we saw it a couple times down the stretch. I think he had one really good SEC tournament game as well. He's fully capable of giving you double-digit points. He doesn't have to do that every night, but he's got that ceiling to his game. And if that's your fifth option on offense, that tells you how dangerous this team can be.
So with that, how much does Auburn really have to have another 4 or 5?
Yeah, I think they want to have that security. My question,
that I just wondered if, you know, you're getting where's Ja'Kai Howard? Is he going to be a three?
I think he's a three.
Okay,
I think Ja'Kai Howard's a three. He could probably play the four. He's light.
Right.
How much was Dylan playing in conference play last year? Because that would be the other question. Can that go up with Jani going over to the four? Can Jani's minutes Jani's going up at all?
No.
Okay.
I think that is a lineup that they are going to use at times. I think that is a situational thing. I don't think, especially when you don't build the roster. Yeah, you don't bring back your All-American center and try to have him play another position. I don't think.
No, yeah, and I was thinking, about how do you see it?
Could
more?
You steal some minutes that way? Yeah, sure. And I think that's the thing. Chris Moore is where, with him coming back, I've always liked Chris Moore more at the four than the three, and it's not a knock on his shot.
That's what I said yesterday.
I agree.
I think he's very similar to Chaney. I think if Chaney is a four in this system, I think Chris Moore is a four as well. We already know he's a good defender. He's one of your better rebounders. He's one on a percentage basis. you know, very big hustle guy.
Oh, he's a glue guy.
And he's one of those guys also that where it's just like, if he gives up some in size and height, he still can hang. Like, that's his style of play. So, yeah, like, when you like think about, okay, well, you have to take up 40 minutes of the four next year. Chaney gets a chunk of them. You give some of that to Chris. You give some of that to maybe playing Janai there at times. You know, maybe you do that. That could work. The fact that they went after R.J. Godfrey, the fact that they've reached out to, like, and there's been more.
Oh, there, yes.
You know, early on in the portal letters, Mikael Brown Jones, like, there was a lot of stretch forwards.
What about Jordan Burks? There's another
Jordan
guy.
Burks, yeah, was another,
I haven't really heard anything about him recently.
There were a couple of guys that Auburn reached out to in the portal pretty early on that haven't made a decision anywhere.
See, Burks is another guy. That kid. Alabama kid who play very many minutes this past year.
They had the kid from St. Bonaventure that they reached out to earlier that they played. Power forward, pretty athletic guy. I don't think he's picked anywhere yet. And it's just one of those things where it's like, yeah, maybe you think about it. There's also the possibility where it's kind of like we were talking about with point guard. It's also the possibility where you look at a JUCO or a D2 guy or you know something like that, like you did last year, and say, hey, we might not give you a ton of minutes right now, but there's role, and there's obviously value to be found in that level, as they did last season with Chaney and Chad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's another thing to keep in mind.
All right, let's get to our first break here of hour number two. Second hour of the show, as usual, being brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Come on in and join us as we continue here on the Thursday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 26 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Justin.
That's right, and we're it's graduation weekend. We've got
already notices out to folks if you're planning on attending any of the events because you've got baseball, softball, and graduation all going on.
Yeah, what's the
this weekend?
We talk some traffic. We'll talk some parking. If you're going to be on campus this weekend because there's graduation. Well, there's three ceremonies for graduation on Saturday, and then there's another one on Sunday, so be advised because there are going to be some times. I think there's softball tonight against Alabama.
Right.
Tomorrow.
And that's TV, right?
That's on ESPN2. As a matter of fact, Auburn Alabama softball getting the basic cable bump to ESPN2. That game starting in just about an hour and a half.
Yeah. So here are the graduations Kirk Sampson sending out an advisory a little earlier about this for fans. To try to plan on this, because graduation Saturday are at 8, 1, and 6. And then the hour, as Kirk writes, the hour lead-in to the evening ceremonies from 4:30 to 5:30 will likely be the heaviest inbound traffic to campus. And baseball, remember, on Saturday is at 7. Sunday graduation times are at 1 and 6 with baseball at 3. Have you got the softball times?
Softball this weekend.
Yeah, okay. Softball is – I got them.
Tonight's at 7. Tomorrow I've got softball at 5.
Right.
And 11 a.m. on Saturday, the third game in the series against Alabama. Is that the final home series
season
for softball?
So here are the events. Yeah, tonight you've got softball at 7. Tomorrow you've got softball at 5, baseball at 6. Saturday is when it's crazy. 8 o'clock with an 8 o'clock graduation ceremony. At 11 o'clock, softball versus Alabama. 1 o'clock, commencement ceremony. 6 o'clock, commencement ceremony. And a 7 o'clock, baseball versus Ole Miss.
Weather's supposed to be pretty nice this weekend, but all the commencements are still at Neville.
Yes,
they're not.
I think there's maybe a 40% chance of rain Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be.
That is the most likely rain that we have over the next week or so.
Yeah, so give yourself. You know, my advice would be give yourself a little bit of extra time.
Right.
Especially for graduation. But yeah, make sure you got tickets. But yeah, be advised that there are going to be a lot of folks on even with the students clearing out, the ones who have already taken their finals and are ready to start the summer, it still could be a pretty busy weekend on campus with baseball, softball, and graduation stuff taking place. So be advised and be ready to maybe have to accommodate different parking or a slightly longer walk to the stadium or something.
All right, tell you what, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour break. We can go ahead and get to that. Want to get into some looks now after it appears, you know, that most of the dust is settled from the transfer portal. Auburn's still looking to add a player or two in the football portal. We'll talk about that, and I want to get Justin's thoughts on the state of Auburn's roster now as we are getting ready to head into the summer workouts when we come back for the final half hour here on the Thursday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final half hour here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And we've talked a good bit about the basketball transfer portal. Football portal closed. We mentioned Coy Moore went in, and that made sense with Auburn adding Keandre Lambert-Smith. The Auburn roster transformation is remarkable when you look at it from the end of the 22 season to right now.
No, yeah, there's no doubt about that because, I mean – what the foundation of it is the recruiting classes, right? You know, you what they were able to get at the end of that 23 class, you know, guys like Keldrick Falk, all those flips that they made, and then this past year. But yeah, you look, I was looking at it today. They have a situation right now on this team this year where this upcoming team where six of the guys that they've brought in through the transfer portal this offseason were guys that were blue chip players coming out of high school. Like they were quality players.
A much different and much more, I think, impact as far as the transfer portal. And Hugh Freeze said as much that he didn't do a good job last year because the focus had to be so much on high school recruiting and trying to manage the roster that he had. But I mean, they have really. I guess Will Redmond obviously deserves a lot of credit, but I mean they have really hit the portal, and I think very successfully here in the offseason.
Yeah, they're able to get address needs, and I think having a more stable roster where you don't feel like you have to just go get guys for the sake of having guys. Defensive tackle was probably the only spot where you felt like okay, well you just need dudes,
and they got them,
and they got quite a few of them. That's the one position group. You know, that and offensive line. I think the line of scrimmage is where I have the biggest, like, okay, what if for the future of Auburn is, like, you know, can they get the talent level there over time? Especially, you know, offensive line is one of those positions where you recruit, you develop, you know that year two, year three, year four, that's probably where you're going to get all of them.
Hey,
that's where I'm thinking, like, that's where I see the potential to make that next step because you obviously have talent in your running back room. You're getting it in your wide receiver room. You're recruiting well at quarterback. Your linebackers, your defensive backs, it's the line of scrimmage where I think is where Auburn, like, that's where the next big phase is going to be. Right now, they've done a really good job of stabilizing that.
Yeah, you mentioned Keldrick Falk being flipped. I think the flip of Connor Lou.
He
is the anchor of that line, and he's around for at least another year this year.
How about Kay and Lee?
Yeah,
I mean Kay and Lee to be a guy that.
I mean, look at those flips. Mm-hmm.
And as we talked about with Connor Lou, remember that Too Tall was going to Ole Miss, and Auburn flipped him from Ole Miss to Auburn as well. Junior college kid, not a college kid, but he was going to go play for Coach Aldridge at Ole Miss instead of coming to Aldridge isn't right. Who's the on the offensive line? Is that Aldridge?
No, it's Thornton.
It's Thornton. He was going to go play for. He was going to go play for Thornton on the offensive line at Ole Miss, and instead followed him to Auburn. Mm-hmm. That's another pretty crucial piece that looks like it's going to be your starting right tackle right now going into this season, sure. And we'll see. You know, we'll see where Too Tall develops, but that, you know, I mean, it's still to me to think about where Auburn was on the offensive line.
It was bad after
the 22 Iron Bowl, like coming out of the 22 season.
It's a much better situation. I just think, yeah, especially depth wise. But I think the big thing for Auburn moving forward is just going to be getting the talent. And I think defensive line they're recruiting really well. It's just offensive line. You got to get stars and you got to get them in bunches.
Yep.
And that's the next step, you know. But I mean, we're in a spot this upcoming year where Auburn's going to have 2 5-star wide receivers, and they hadn't had a single one of those since 2002.
Auburn was ahead of the curve a little bit because you know I do. It doesn't seem nearly as impossible as it did a couple years ago to do what Hugh Freeze did, where you show up at a team that needs 3 or 4 starters on the offensive line, and you're able to field a team that's even competitive the following year. Because often, you know, in those situations, mm-hmm. like you're talking about a 3-win team because they just don't have conference level talent on the offensive line, and that's gonna. I mean, I guess Colorado would be, you know, not to make this too much about what Deion Sanders has been up to.
They did, though. They were a 4-win team who ran off all their linemen.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, like, I just think that is something where, you know, in the, like, I was tempering expectations for year one of Hugh Freeze when he first arrived. It's because, like, look, you know, he's whoever gets this job, you know, it may be a year.
That roster was the least talented in at least a decade for Auburn. When it came to just what he inherited,
the 22, the 23, 23, yeah.
Yeah, the 23 team. And you know, the thing about it is they should have been better. They should have won more games.
The 22 team was probably the least talented team in a decade or so of Auburn football. Like, I think based on how the recruiting had demand, and you know what? Because you look at who had left after 21, right? You think about the. Among others, you look at who departed from that team. On top of the way,
that 22 team had Derek Hall and Colby Wooden on it.
It did. So, it had a couple of pieces.
Had some really good players.
It did. I mean, it's not to. And I think the guys who stuck around, the veterans on that team.
Yeah.
And I guess
that much offense.
No.
It was a team that you know, like that was, and then the key players on that 22 team were guys that were leaving after the season was over too, which only compounded.
22 also had Tank Bigsby on it.
22 team, it was the last year of Tank Bigsby on it.
I'm gonna give the edge to 22. No,
I think 23. Yeah, I think 23 was 23 less talented.
23 was, and this is not be all end all, but like 23, I looked at it today. 23 had the least amount of blue chip players Auburn had in at least a decade on a team. 0 5-stars on that team, and that's the first time they had ever been able to say. Since I think it was, I mean, you got to go way back. The last time Auburn did not carry a 5-star on their team, and you know that's not the reason why they lost all those games. But like they had to play up, and it's one of those things about the 23 season that is so, you know, that's where I think there's a lot of gray area with it, where it's like with Auburn, you look at a situation where they did not have the roster that they're used to having. And yet they took Georgia down to the wire. They should have beaten Alabama. And yet they also, you know, no-showed at LSU 2 years after winning there and lost to New Mexico State.
Like,
you know, and it's just
the bowl game.
LSU also went from T.J. Finley to Jaden Daniels in those 2 years between visits.
That's true. But that's the thing, though. It's like. It's one of those things where it's like there's a lot of gray area with that team, and Hugh Freeze will be the first one to tell you Auburn should have won more football games last year. But when you look at what the roster was and what it is now, you know, what it is 2 years later, year and a half later, I should say, it's like it has gotten better. Now it's a matter of can they just show it on the field, because the roster can get better, and you can collect star power, and you can get really good recruiting classes, and you can still go nowhere. And the proof of that just got fired at Texas A&M. Like, it was like, yeah. They had everything they wanted in terms of roster building, and still didn't work out. That's where it shows where it's like there's, you know, roster talent acquisitions is square one. It's the name of the game, but it's not be all end all. You know, and That's the thing about this team upcoming. They are a better roster. Now they just got to go do something with it. They're in a better position to do it for sure, but you just got to go do it.
I was comparing 22 more to the years of the past, too, right? I wasn't even thinking about 22 versus 23. I was thinking like
that's what we were talking about.
Well, no, you're sure, but I was thinking
things
like,
have been heading down.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about
things have been heading down since 17. Yes. If you look at the recruiting numbers, that 17 team, if you look at the talent composite at 247, that 17 team was the number 7 or number 8 team in the country in terms of overall talent that year and was a really good team, obviously. Yeah. And then Auburn drops to about 13 or 14, and then it keeps going back. And now you're at the point where you're at 17, 18, you know. So still, I mean, compare – that's the other thing about where it's just when you talk about life in the SEC, especially in the old SEC West, where it looked at as like – and as a team that plays Georgia every year – you know, like
you could be a top 20
we're the 18th best roster in the country. Well, it's the worst you've been in a decade in terms of just raw talent, and also it's ninth or tenth
eight teams ahead of you, and those rankings are on your schedule.
Yeah, this exactly. Year. Good luck.
No, and you made the point about like Hugh Freeze looking back on this past season. Like I think New Mexico State was probably the only time this past season Auburn lost to a team with inferior talent. But at the same time, I mean, you could say Maryland in the bowl game if you want.
I don't like Maryland. Yeah,
but the bowl game's so different because of but look at the regular season for a second.
There's
but
a difference between a difference between losing and losing did.
But the games Auburn looking back in hindsight looks at as you know the missed opportunities from 23 are the games where you were punching above your weight until the last quarter against Ole Miss and Georgia and Alabama. It's like those are the games that.
Ole Miss, they were kind of out of it until the fourth quarter. Like they scored late to cut it to.
That's right.
To
I guess Georgia, yeah. Georgia and Bama were more games.
I remember Ole Miss being one of those games where it's like it's going to turn out to be closer on the score, but it never really felt that way.
Did Ole Miss get close? Was it a close beginning of the fourth quarter and Ole Miss pulls away?
Ole Miss game, if I remember correctly, it was like from the second to the for early or late first to middle of the third quarter, nobody did anything on offense on either team, and Auburn couldn't take advantage, and then Ole Miss finally broke through because you can only hold that offense down for so long. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Fourth quarter, you're in the game with Georgia. That hadn't happened in a long time. And then you should have beaten Alabama. Like you had every opportunity to beat that Alabama team. And that's the same team that also, you know, we kind of just like had no showed against New Mexico State.
It is a tie game at the end of the third quarter against Ole Miss. Jackson Dart scores on the last play of the third quarter to make it 21-14 Ole Miss. And then Auburn punts and Ole Miss scores another touchdown to make it 14.
Yeah, but that long stretch where it was. If I remember correctly, Ole Miss couldn't do anything on offense and Auburn couldn't do anything on offense.
It's 14-14 until the last play of the third quarter, and then Ole Miss makes it a 7-point game, and then they make it a 14-point game about 5 minutes later, and Auburn is down 14 for most of the fourth quarter. But it's still a game. I mean, I think those are the three. Yeah. Those are the three games where you feel like you're well into the second half of a game where you were a considerable underdog, and it's even or close to it.
Here's the problem, though. All three of those games were at home.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, that, and you don't play Ole Miss this year, but, like, you talk about missed opportunities. Like, those are really, really bad. And, yeah, if Auburn would have beaten Alabama, they should have beaten Alabama. What you do in that case is, you know, what does it mean in the grand scheme? Well, it's an Iron Bowl win. It's more vibes than like anything tangible. But like, yeah, you flip that Georgia game, you flip that Ole Miss. Like those are, that's the thing. It's like the margin for error is so tight in this league, and that was the thing that I remember writing about and saying about a lot during the end of the Malzahn era. It was just like, you know, it's the execution that you have down the stretch. Auburn is going to get back to the point that you think of with Hugh Freeze, you know, with the way they're recruiting, getting back to being a team that looks more like a top 10 team on the field in terms of the talent they bring in. That's great. It's just like they've also got to make those strides in terms of that execution. And, you know, you're not going to have it all figured out in year one. Year two, though, especially with the way the schedule works out, when a team fades
in the fourth quarter, often, especially if that's a trend, if that's a thing that happens, you look at depth, And I remember watching when Lane Kiffin had teams with scholarship limitations at SC, and they'd be very competitive for two or three quarters, and then they'd fall apart in the fourth quarter because the starters had been in the game the whole game, or they didn't have the backups that other teams had. And that's where, if you can replenish that, if you can get back to it, but you have to be so good when the other team has a depth advantage. You have to be so good for four quarters. Auburn ran into teams like Ole Miss, Bama, and Georgia this year that had a depth advantage, and they it was close, but no cigar against any of them.
Let's get to the drive hotline, 334-321-1390. And John. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. I have two questions for you real quick. One, on the 2023 rosters, would you say that Auburn-Arkansas game, would you say Arkansas had more talent, or would you say those two teams were even as far as talent?
Which one?
The Arkansas.
Arkansas.
This past season?
Yes.
Yeah. Auburn on paper was a little more talented, but it wasn't that big of a difference.
It was pretty close.
That line at kickoff? I feel like Auburn was a very slight favorite at kickoff in Fayetteville, and the game
that was a team that I thought had just flat out given up. You know, that was the big thing.
Well, they lost, and then they lost. Yeah,
I didn't watch that. You know, I didn't watch that game live. That was the one.
Oh yeah, that was the one. Yeah,
that's
where
I watched on DVR, and at some point I said, "Okay, I'm going to go ahead and skip to the end here. What in the world?" And I think I held out until 35-3 or something before I decided to see how bad it actually was.
Yeah, Arkansas wasn't that much.
Auburn was a 2.5 point dog in that game. So basically, even on the field, you usually get about three. So like maybe Auburn a little bit more talented, but not by much though, for sure, John.
And then the other question I had, guys, is when I think about just rosters and talent across the league, I look at this Missouri team that's going to be more hyped before the start of the season. And I'm just thrilled with the new schedule setup, because I think Missouri's been feeding for years off Vandy, off Kentucky, off South Carolina, off of the depleted Florida team. I mean, if that team was in the West, I mean, I don't think they're playing Ohio State by any stretch of the imagination in a bowl game. And I really look for teams like Missouri and Kentucky would be numbers 1 and 2 that I think will come back to the pack. And I think these new schedules will really help Auburn and A&M more than anybody else in the league. Thank you.
No, yeah, John. That's a great point. And when we talked about the end of divisions, I think my big take about it was, it doesn't make Auburn's life easier, but it makes everybody else's harder, and that
evens
helps
things
you.
Up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the point.
It's like, no, you're down here with us now. If you're Auburn,
as the only team in the West that played Georgia every year, and most of the teams in the East avoid Bama. Like, I think restructuring it, and even if Georgia stays on the schedule, which is an if as long as we have eight games,
that's not going to happen
in conference play.
It will for 2 years.
You got to get it.
But even if Georgia stays on the schedule, I still think you've made it more balanced for everybody. I mean, Missouri this year in conference play, by the way, at home against Missouri's home games in league play this year: Vanderbilt, Auburn, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. Missouri's road games are A&M, Alabama, South Carolina, and Mississippi State.
Yeah, that's a little tougher.
That's a lot more favorable than a lot of teams. I mean, I look at Oklahoma got absolutely
welcome to the SEC.
Meanwhile, Texas gets to kind of skate. Georgia, but I think that's the only superpower they got to play.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tuthope, owner of
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of the Thursday Drive, and right back to the drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Sherry is next. Hey, Sherry.
Hey, Sherry.
Hey, guys. I was wondering what y'all thought about what playing time is going to look like now for Aiden Holloway, now that Bama's got most of their team back, plus a couple of great recruits.
Alabama is one of the teams this year where I'm like, I don't know how all these fellows are going to play.
Are they going to feel like a JV squad? Or, are they
going to have to start running like hockey shifts in?
I don't know.
I thought Aiden would have a harder time starting at Alabama next year just because of the way things went this season. Then they go get Filon. Then they bring, you know, they recruited a ton of
young blood. They've got, I mean, and
Sears could come
back. They still feel like Sears is very likely to come back.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Yeah, they landed the Pepperdine transfer, like, during the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, the
Houston,
wing.
Houston Millett was the one who, I mean, he landed, like, he transferred to Bama, which is odd. You don't see teams like while they're still playing.
It was between their first and second round game.
Yes. Yeah,
it was early.
They pick up a guard from Pepperdine. I think Sears is expected to drop out of the NBA draft and come back to Alabama.
They did.
But we don't.
They just somebody else is in there now. Somebody declared and could come back.
Grant Nelson's back.
Nelson's back.
He announced that last week.
It's the
Stevenson, right?
Stevenson
is still
in the
Stevenson's
draft
still in the draft. Sears has the opportunity to drop. I don't know when the deadline is to drop out.
It's the end of the month.
Yeah, sometime the end of the month.
Sometime in May, you know, Sears will have to make his decision to return to college or not.
The 29th or the 30th.
I speculated earlier in the show that both Holloway and Filon, maybe they've been sold on this is how you get to be Alabama's starter in 25 is by spending
which one.
But well, maybe both of them are gonna, you know. I don't know, but it's like, I mean, that's.
I'll be interested if they consider Filon to be a point guard
because both Holloway and Filon could have stayed as a reserve at their current school. Like Filon was going to Kansas.
Yeah, the expectation of being a starter the next year.
Yeah, I mean, you know that. So it's a curious choice if they were prioritizing playing time, which makes me wonder if in fact. Playing time was the ultimate priority for either of those guys.
Appreciate the call, Sherry. Justin Forward, completely out of time. Let everybody know once again about what's coming up and how they can get.
Yeah, AuburnObserver.com. Check it out. Stories this week on Jeremiah Cobb and on what Auburn is bringing back in basketball. Mailbag out tomorrow. Podcast tomorrow as well. And roster tracker still going strong on the football and the basketball side. $6 a month or $60 a year.
Moms, dads, grads. Auburn Observer subscription is an excellent gift for the Auburn fan in your life.
Yep.
That's going to do it for the Thursday drive. You back tomorrow?
I am here.
I'm back tomorrow. Drew will be here.
You got a concert.
Next Friday. Next Friday. I'm next Friday.
You might call Barrett.
We'll try.
See what Don Dunn's up to.
The Braves are out of town, right? So, yes, Barrett may be available tomorrow. Stay tuned. Have a good one, everybody. We're out of here.